Between the Barrels, where every rider has a story. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Between the Barrels. I'm your host, Madeline Green. I hope you all have been enjoying the interviews as much as I have. It is amazing to learn all the different techniques that each of these trainers and riders use. It has definitely been helpful. Our next guest has a beautiful Palomino stud who seems to be a fan favorite. He is not only beautiful, but a show-off in the arena as well. And we can't forget his owner, Trisha Aldridge, who was no stranger to the winner's circle before him. So take a listen. Hey, Trisha, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. So how is your day going so far?
Crazy. I feel like when I'm home for 2 weeks, I have to fit in a month of stuff. And so it's always literally running in circles.
What does a normal day consist of for you?
Well, right now it is breeding season, so I feel like that's a whole new level of chaos. And the highlight of my week, like my biggest accomplishment this week, was putting air in my tires. It seems like the simplest things are the hardest things. So it's really nice to like have a second, get my oil changed right now and try to get all the little things done. So mostly riding and breeding season, checking mirrors, setting up contacts and stuff, and getting ready for collection day tomorrow. So it's pretty chaotic. We're hanging in there. Last night we had a baby born, and another recip stole it. So we've been up all night.
Oh my goodness!
Making sure to get that all going the right way. But mama and baby are working well this morning, so we're hanging in there.
So it just straight up stole the baby.
Oh yeah. And I was like, I think the other one is due first, and we went out there, and I was like, this is not gonna work.
Always interesting.
Oh, it's never boring around here.
So I kind of always start with this question, but tell me your story and how you got started in barrel racing.
Oh gosh. So my family has always liked horses, but never really like super into them. My dad actually, I was born in Fort Hood, Texas, and my dad used to like in the spare time go and do like the first calf stuff. And he always loved horses, but we just never really had horses. And I moved around a lot. You know, my dad was in the military, and when we moved to Tennessee, I always begged for a pony. And so finally we got a pony, and you know, I really we did like play days and pretty like minimal stuff. Like I definitely didn't come from like a rodeo family or breeding cooperation or anything like that. And you know, just as I got older, I always tried like different disciplines, and I've always had to haul the ride or like drive to the barn, or we've never had horses really like at our place or anything. And just riding with different trainers, and I tried a lot of different disciplines. I rode, I did eventing for a little while, red reiners, cutters, stuff like that. But I always just kind of come back to barrel racing. So we did that all through like high school, but I never did high school rodeo or anything. And then I really wanted to train young horses, but, you know, it's kind of hard to figure out, like, where to start. So I never had any money to buy anything, so I was always buying, like, everybody's reject horses that people hated, and, you know, and it was a really cool way to come up, because I had figured out how to fix a lot of problems, and I got really good at problem solving, and so I was able to, like, kind of turn those horses, and then when I would, you know, fix one and get it in a good home and everything, then I would just buy something better bred. And then 100 times later,
yeah,
here we are. So it might even be more than 100, but, you know, finally just really paying attention to breeding. The breeding side really fascinates me. You know, a lot of people that follow me and stuff know. So I when I was like 24, I went back to college. So I actually have an engineering degree. Did work for the public for that for a little while. I worked for a really big construction firm, and I really liked doing that, but the horses just kind of kept pulling me back in. And then I was like, you know, I think I'm going to try to do this. So I set a goal for myself, and I was like, I'm going to win $100,000 a year, and, you know, I'm going to work with the studs and stuff and try to get it where I could, you know, make more money in horses than I could at the firm. And so through a whole lot of hard lessons and sweat equity, we're getting there. So
wow.
So it's been really, really a cool, I,
I feel like I'm almost at the point where I can, like, take a breath, you know? I've lost an ass for, like, 15 years. So, like, oh, man, I think I did it.
Do you feel like to make that much money in the horses, is it harder than doing what you were doing with your degree?
I think it's, like, where they say, you know, like, you work 9 to 5 and you want to work better hours, so you go to self-employed and then you work, like, 120 hours.
Right, right. It's never ending.
It's like that. So I'm definitely, you know, we have a lot of different things. So I do the Red Hot Running Horses blog. I think it's Red Hot Barrel Horses on Facebook because I keep getting my page reported. But that deal, you know, that's been really cool. So, like, a huge fundamental thing for me is to give back, because I remember starting out and, like, trainers wouldn't help me when you'd ask questions. You know, I didn't have any money, so, like, I was kind of always, like, talked down to. And I just remember that feeling of, like, you know, I remember the first time, you know, I talk a lot about Lasix on my page. I remember the first time I'm, like, asking about Lasix, and, you know, and everybody's like, oh yeah, and then I start asking around and everybody's doing it, and I'm like, why wouldn't anybody tell me that this is thing? Like, I don't even know what I don't know, you know? And I'm like, it's so hard, because even if I can just help one person to just ask questions to their vets and barriers and, you know, continue to seek knowledge, I feel like that's better for our industry as a whole, is to just put that education out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge part of my page, is like trying to give knowledge back. You know, you don't have to listen to me, but at least if you're going to start asking questions and, you know, find your own answers and stuff, you know, that's what I want to promote, seeking knowledge. And so that's been a really big thing on the blog. And then my stallion is, like, way more famous than Brad Pitt right now. I laugh because I used to be Trisha Aldridge and now I'm Audios' mom.
That is so funny.
So he's super popular. So we have a clothing line for him. That's audiospinkleandstallion.com. And then we do all that stuff. We have the supplement line, which is kind of kicking back off right now, which is the Red Hot Equine Aminos. And that we've actually been doing it for a long time. I think it's like, this is the 4th year of us doing it, but I have been so busy. Like, I have not really been able to ship anything. And so it's really hard for me, like, to be home. And so I finally, hired a girl to help me with all of that. So I'm super excited because she's really great at getting everything out to everybody. We've been, like, full steam ahead over here. And then on top of all that, I am getting ready to leave next week. And I think it's like 2 weeks gone, 2 weeks home, 2 weeks gone, 2 weeks home, and then I'm gone for a month.
So busy. You talked about your stud a little bit. Tell us his whole story with you.
So a very long time ago, I had this feeling about, you know, I'm big on pedigrees. So I had this feeling about how I really wanted to buy this mare, the 3x the Furious, who that ended up being, from the Shimke Ranch. And I don't know what it was, but, like, I just had this feeling. I saw, like, one picture of her on Facebook, and I messaged Amy, and I was like, hey, you know, I want to buy your horse. And I know I sound like a crazy person. She's like, she's not for sale. And I'm like, well, I really need to buy this horse. And so I got her bought, and she ended up running out, like, $230,000 her futurity year. She, you know, won basically everything for me. And so I had that same feeling about that colt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I saw a picture of him on Facebook. He was for sale. He's a weanling. And I just kind of kept coming back to him. And the crazy thing is, I actually bred to Trace Ace the year before. So I had a Trace Ace colt on the ground already out of a really nice mare. And Cody Bowserman's running him this year. And I just kept, I was like, I think I'm going to sell mine and then I'm going to buy this colt. And I just had this feeling. And I was like, I just kept coming back to him. And it's funny because historically, like, I'm not the biggest Frenchman's Guy fan. Don't lynch me for that. But, like, just personal preference, you know, like, I just feel like my personality kind of clashes with the ones that I've had. And I've had some nice ones, but I just feel like I have a little bit of personality clash with them. And so I'm not really, like, a huge Frenchman's Guy fan, but I've always loved the babies out of that mare. And I was able to watch some get trained when I was in college at an arena that I was at. They had some out of her. And I just was like, man, you know, I really love Trace Ace. And, you know, and Sway was out of a Trace Ace mare. And I was like, man, it'd be really cool to, like, see, you know, how this cross would work. And so I went up I think I was checking receipts or something. And their farm was close to there. So I was like, I'm going to pull in and see. And I ended up buying him. And we ended up selling the other colt. And then I just, like, I always just had this feeling about, I can't even explain it. I'm like, I don't know. He wasn't really anything special. I laugh because he has such a crazy, wild personality right now. But, like, he wasn't like that. He was a turtle. He was, like, would never run in the field, like, nothing. I mean, he was, like, always, like, napping. I mean, it was, like, a lot. Like, there was nothing really about him that was, like, oh, wow. You know, like, but I just always had this feeling about him. And we were talking about it last night, actually, because I was, like, I went out to the field one day, and he was a yearling, and I was going to fly spray him. And when I went to spray him, he, like, jumped up in the air and kind of, like, struck at me. And my boyfriend, he's like, he's not a horse person at all. And he was like, oh my God. And I was like, I'm so excited that he can move that fast. Like, I was worried he was going to be a turtle. So I'm laughing because I was like, that's the first time I was like, oh, maybe there's some, like, a little bit of fire in there. You know, so I was really lucky and I begged Rodney Yost, who broke the 3 times of fury. I begged and begged and begged him to take him. And he kept telling me no. And he has like a 3-year waiting list forever. So, I begged and begged and begged, and finally he had, like, an opening, and he was like, well, if he's big, you know, you can send him early, and I can get him. So we sent him up there, and he got him broke, and he absolutely loved him. And, you know, I always try to ask the colt starter, you know, especially on a stallion, like, you know, do you think it's worth keeping a stallion? I was like, if we got to geld him, we got to geld him. But I was like, you know, I really hope to keep him a stallion. So I'm like, but, you know, how's he handling everything? And he was like, there's no way I would geld this colt. And I was like, well, that's a good sign. I don't think I've ever heard that from a colt.
Yeah. Star.
Normally they're like, get the scissors out. But he loved him. Like the very first day that he got up there, he sent me a picture of him like sitting on him bareback with a halter and lead rope. And I was like, first of all, you're a crazy person. But he loved him a lot. And he told me, you know, when I asked him about, like, you know, is he ready? And he was like, well, you know, if you just want to leave him up here till his early teens, like, that's fine with me. So it was really cool to get, like, that good report from Rodney. And then I brought him down here in the summer of his 2-year-old year. And so we really, like, focused on, like, dragging him around. So basically his first day even back here, he was tied on the trailer with all my geldings and, like, started the education process. You know, like, I was like, this is gonna be your life, you're gonna get the hell over it.
Yeah.
So I worked really, really hard socializing him as a 2- and 3-year-old. I think, like, late his 2-year-old year, when I went to Wyoming, I left him at a rehab facility and he got cast in the stall and almost broke both of his hocks.
Oh my God.
And when I got home, like, nobody told me that he was hurt. And that when I was like, hey, I'm going to come get him. And they were like, well, we're kind of busy. So, you know, if you just want to come tomorrow. And I was like, well, that's weird. You know, I'm like, I'm just going to pick him up. Like, nobody needs to even be there. And so I drove over there and his hocks were like the size of cantaloupes and like blood everywhere. Like, it had been swollen for some time and it was a huge mess. We went straight to my vet, like $3,500 an hour out later.
Wow.
We got his hocks like pretty normal. They were beautiful before that happened. But, you know, the silver lining to that is when that happened, like he was so easy to haul with me that I didn't, like, after leaving him and that going so terribly that I was like, he can just come with me. Like, I'll just pay for the extra stalls. I'll just take him with me everywhere. Like, I would rather him be with me than at a rehab place. And so I just dragged him with me his whole 3-year-old year to every fraternity I went to. Like, he's just been hanging out, chilling. And this year, you know, that's just paid off in such a big way because I have no qualms about taking him anywhere or any stalling situations that I'm in. We bred like 10 mares when he was a 2-year-old. And then last year we did a full breeding season. He collected Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then he bred about 75 mares last spring. And then I got to like kind of to like cheat the system, right? We collected him 3 days a week. He got to go to all the shows with me and hang out. And like, so this year is absolutely no different than last year. And so he's just like such a good traveler. And even though we're collecting him when I'm home and stuff, it's just another day at the office for him. So it's been really cool that he's been able to like really keep that separate. He definitely knows when he's on the road and he loves his job. So fast forward through all that and, you know, it can either go really great for you or really terrible, but everybody tuned in for the slot race. And I was like, I hope I don't get fucked off in front of all these people. But, you know, he just handled the pressure like a freaking champ and like, and he really hadn't stopped. So he's placed in every fraternity average that we've competed at and he's at like almost 210,000 now. And he's just a freaking unicorn. He is a real life unicorn, and no one will ever convince me otherwise.
Yeah, so your intuition was right on him.
I know, so now it makes me worry, because every time I get that feeling, I'm like, I don't know, I just gotta buy it.
Did he come to you with the name Adios Pantalones?
No, he didn't have a name, and then we actually named him something different, because Leslie's like, you can name him, so we named him. I didn't, like, love the name, but I was like, well, I'll at least get his papers, you know? And then,
right.
And then, and my friend actually sent me a Snapchat of, like, the beer can. It's a beer brand in Texas, and it's the Adios Pantalones. It's like a little rooster. And I was laughing because I was like, that's what he reminds me of, is a little rooster. And so that's how he got his name. And I was like, I'm going to name my horse that. And I went and did it on AQHA, like, right then. And I was like, this is going to be perfect. And I laughed because I really wanted an A name, because my other stallion, this is stuff people don't think about, but like my other stallion is Streaking Little Wayne. And like anytime I go to like a website for him or anything like that, I have to scroll past like 900 stallions.
To the bottom.
And so I was like, I'm going to do an A name. Like I'm going to the front of the line. So I thought it was perfect. You know, with Trace Days, you know, being Spanish too, I was like, it's really cute. And then like for the marketing of him, my gosh, like it's been so much fun. Like we have the cutest logos, and you know, we're doing all the t-shirts. So like one of the shirts is like, who needs pants to have a good time?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, we've really been able to like angle the all the sayings, and so it's been super, super fun to have all of his stuff. And that's been really successful with the clothing stuff. Like we've sold a ton of clothing, and it's just really cool that he has so many supporters like all over the world.
Let's talk about your training process a little bit. Kind of take us through what you do to get the horses, you know, well-rounded when it comes to barrel racing.
I'm kind of a less is more person. So I typically don't really start them on the barrels at all as a two-year-old. I try to like leave them alone as long as I can. You know, I like them to kind of be broke by like summer-ish. I ride them, you know, basically as a two-year-old when the weather's good is kind of how I go about it. Like, you know, just when I have time, I'll kind of fiddle around with them. And then my goal is to kind of get them started on the barrels early their three-year-old year, and I'd like to have them ready to exhibition by summer. I have a little bit of a different style of training. It's, you know, I've kind of gone through all the phases, and I've kind of, you know, like I really appreciate a well-broke horse, and I want something that's like sensitive to ride, but also like I used to get them like really broke, and I feel like that kind of bit me on the barrels. So I'm a very analytical person, and I feel like, you know, when I needed an inch, I got 5 inches. Well, that's time, you know?
Right.
And so I've really kind of transitioned my program to be like where I would say like a train on tracks, like where if I'm moving around, my horse can tell the difference if I am making an intentional move or an accidental move, or what's going on. So I want my horses to be so confident in where they put their feet that they know, like, if I'm telling them, hey, I need to move you to the outside because this is not great ground, or, you know, or like, hey, bud, I'm like falling off of you, so if you could just keep going, I'll catch up. Funny, because, you know, on the social media, obviously I get a lot of crap all the time, but like a lot of people have talked about how like I move around a lot, and I move around like intentionally. I look around and stuff, because I would find like when my horses were so in tune to me, when I would look around, my horses would move, which is great when you're riding around. You cannot replicate that, right? Like if you're running, you can't replicate that run again and again and again. So I was like, I need to get where I can replicate consistency. And so that's kind of been like what I really pushed for, where I can be like, okay, if I'm moving around, or if I pick up and look at the camera guy or something dumb, my horse is going to know to stay on the track, you know? And the cool thing is, for as much as people talk crap about that, my horses are so consistent, so easy to ride. And then they also are going on to like be successful with the next people, which is really a really big, important piece of my program. You know, like it doesn't do any good if I'm the only one that can ride them. And so it's been really cool to like see, but, you know, from that standpoint, like, it's almost like I get them really broke, and then I kind of back them off a little bit, and then just really try to instill that confidence in them. I feel like as much as the futurity stuff is, you know, like, the horses either have it or they don't. Like, they're either going to make a futurity horse or they're not. Like, there's no amount of training. Like, you can't force them to do it. And the coolest part, you know, especially like with audios, is from BFA. So that it's been like 5 months, right? Mm-hmm. From there, I guarantee I have worked him on the powder at home less than 5 times. And like, he's just been so consistent. And so also like learning on that horse of like, when you have that type of horse, knowing when to leave them alone, you know, and knowing when they need training or need something or need, you know, whatever's going on. So I feel like that as a trainer, that's a really hard thing, is to be like, okay, I trust him. He's going to do his job. You're giving me a reason not to, so I'm not going to do it. And I'd rather him be bored loping circles than loping around the barrels, you know. So the barrels is like the funnest thing ever for him. And I think that that's been a huge part of like keeping him so solid this year.
What do you feel like are kind of some of the biggest challenges that you face as a futurity jockey?
So I think it's funny because, you know, I think in the beginning when I very first started getting horses that were doing good, they were like, oh, she's just got like one horse. And then now I feel like all the futurity people know that I'm just kind of here to stay.
Yeah.
And I feel like too in the beginning, because I do things a little bit different and everything's like really public. And so I think that like people have gotten to know me a lot more now and know that it's not like, oh, she's just bragging about this or that. Like, I think now they see like it's marketing and it's this and, you know, pushing
right
what people see and stuff like that. Kind of like more of the technique behind it. My goal is as a futurity rider is to ride less horses. Quick story, but like several years ago, I went to Ruby Buckle in Memphis and I was jump riding horses. I had a client that wanted me to jump ride some horses. So I had like 3 horses for them. I had 2 that I was already riding. And then I had like somebody else wanted me to ride one. We ended up bringing like 11 head. Okay. The only 2 horses I won money on were the 2 I was already riding.
Right.
And I was like, so why am I doing this? I already knew which horses I was going to win money on. You know, like I already knew I was prepared on them and all that stuff. And I was, you know, and I'm like, so I really took that lesson to heart as far as like, I want to be able to ride, you know, 1 or 2 really good horses and not 15 and be exhausted and, you know, and not be as in tune with those horses. So like my goal as a futurity rider is to have less horses, but better quality, right? And make the same money as everybody else. Like, it's been a little bit of a process to kind of get it to that, but also it's required me to be really critical about picking which horses I ride. I'm getting better at, you know, picking which qualities are better for what I do, what mm-hmm. breeding is the best for what I do, you know, all of that. So I think that going forward into the futurity stuff, it's just really helped to be, I always tell everybody, I'm like, be critical. I want to be really critical of my choices so that I can make more and do less.
What style horse do you feel like you ride best?
That's a tricky one. I always want to be able to get a little bit of their nose.
Okay.
And I like that 4-wheel drive style. And I really, really what I like is like in between, I can't ride a free runner to save my life. But that style where it's like, they really want to fire off between the barrels, but they really want to turn. So I really focus like all my breeding towards that, like a racehorse, you know, something that's really going to run, but also like, I want to be able to push my hand forward into the turn, know that that horse is going to turn. So I can ride several different styles of horses, but going back to like lessons that I have learned, I used to be like, I'm going to ride free runner horse and I'm going to be better at it and I'm going to be a better rider. Okay. Which is great in theory until you have a horse that you can really win on. And when I had Sway, I had another horse that was really free. And when I hit about $75,000 in barrels on Sway, because I was like, my timing was so off from the other horse, I was like, okay, it's time to rethink what we're doing here. Because, you know, when you're not like winning all the time, you know, you can kind of get around both styles fine. But when you have a horse that can compete at that top level that your timing needs to be like perfect with, it costs so much money to make those mistakes. So like that whole year, I made a lot of mistakes. So fast forward to this year, you know, if they didn't ride similar to Adios, I sent them home. And not because they were bad horses or not, you know, nothing like that. But I was going to give somebody else a chance to get with those horses to compete this year. But also like, you know, especially with the stallion, my focus is on him. My timing needs to be as good as it can be. There needs to be no reason that I'm making those type of mistakes, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that you know, even though my horses that I'm running now are different, you can all kind of like, they all want to like tip their nose. They all have more of a, that four-wheel drive style, you know, and I think that that's helped getting them all kind of to a similar style, you know, where they at least ride the same, like the cues are the same, if that makes sense, a little different styles.
What do you feel like sets apart the top jockeys in the sport from the rest of the field?
Oh, that's a really good question. Man, I think nothing, at the end of the day, nothing replaces time in the saddle. And I have a big emphasis on the breeding. So anybody that's listening to this, you can ride papers. You know, not all of them are going to be what you think that they are, but there's, it definitely makes a big difference. And a lot of people tell me, oh, I can't afford it. And if you can't afford it, that's why you have to ride papers, right? Because so, and all this stuff, you know, I've had a lot of horses that I've gotten to try, and they might not be exactly what I want, but because they're really well bred, I'm easily able to get out of them, and then I can try another one. And I think that it's the turnover. So, you know, if you want to ride at the top of your game, and I tell people that all the time because they kind of get stuck on horses, or they don't want to sell it. Oh, somebody else is going to win on it, or, you know, all these crazy reasons. And I was like, if I told you you had to go through 50 head to get your own Adios, like how fast would you roll through those horses? Like you'd be selling them like hotcakes, right?
Right.
So I think that sometimes people just get really stuck on that this horse is so talented or this or that, but if they're not doing it, they're not doing it, you know? And so with that, the futurity focus side, that's what it is. There's so much turnover in the futurity horses, you know, where like you're able to try so many different ones and see what you like. You start learning, I compare it to dating, right? Like you start learning like, okay, these traits I can work through, these traits, no go. Like there's certain little things that I see like in their movements, or like I won't have a stud or a horse with like a defiance to them. But like if they have that like little bit of like defiance, like stubborn, will do something like passive aggressive, almost like that, I won't keep that horse, you know. Like I got plenty of them that think that they're the best thing that ever walked the earth, and like, then that's fine, I can get around those ones, you know. But they got to have like the right type of try, and I've really learned to like pick that out. And I think that those futurity riders that you see that are at the top, that's what they've really been able to hone their skills to, is to see, like, that's why you see a lot of them that ride the same type of breeding and stuff like that, you know. It's just because like that's what they've learned that they can win on. Then that high turnover on top of that, where they really get to see a lot of different things that most people don't get to see.
And you're in Texas, but I have seen where you've gone to Perry and you've been out on the East Coast a little bit. What do you look for in a show, and what does it take to get you to come out towards the East Coast?
Money. It's all about money. Yeah, so, I mean, it really is. Like, we have so many great choices here. You know, I did go out to Perry, and that one was really cool. I actually went, we're trying to decide if I was going to go or not, and Jamie and Ashley Hunt, you know, we're going to go, and so Ashley was really helpful, and they got all my stalls, told me, they laid over with me, and they told me where to go everywhere, and so that was really helpful, you know, because it's hard when you're hauling, because you don't know where you're going. And I laugh because I feel like when I've left, I've actually done a lot better. And I don't know if it's just like the pressure of driving like 20 hours and being like, if I hit a barrel, I'm going to cry. And so like when I went to Perry, I won both rounds. And then when I went to Arizona, I won one round, was second, the other one, and then won both rounds of the SVE. So I was like, I think that pressure, I'm like real serious when I leave town. But you know, basically it's just figuring out like what you can win, you know. Going out there was a really good experience for me, going to Georgia, and then same thing in Arizona. You know, when I went to Arizona, I kind of like totaled up. I was like, okay, if I could be in like the top five, kind of what I thought I could win. I looked up their results last year, and I was like, I figured I could win like 25,000. I ended up winning like 45,000 at that show.
Nice.
And that one was, it ended up being way better than I thought it would be. But you know, knowing it's worth a drive, because it's the other thing about that is there's so many things here around Texas that's less of a drive. And like, luckily, you know, Adios has been hauled quite a bit, so he's pretty good. But some horses just don't handle that haul very good. especially early in the year, you know, because Georgia was in December. So, like, you know, 15 hours for a three-year-old is a hard haul. You know, at the end of the year, I'm not worried about it. They've been everywhere. You know, we know everything about them at that point, how they're going to handle all the things. But that this early part is definitely, you know, a lot more difficult on a baby. So I try to factor in how they're handling all the things, you know, how much you can win. And then the ground, you know, conditions is pretty important to me also, because, you know, you don't want to haul them out there and then blow their confidence. So, and then that could really screw you up the rest of the year. You know, a few years ago, we went to one and we ended up turning out of the second round of the security because the ground was so bad and it sucked. But a lot of my friends that ran crippled their horses, you know, and like that, you know, at the end of the day, like even if you could win $5,000 to win the round, it doesn't matter because you're going to be, how much did you give up? You know, you're going to spend in vet bills and do all that. So like, I'm definitely not afraid to turn out of something or, you know, I try to always make sure that I put my horse first. And especially like with Adios this year, because I hit the spring stuff really hard, way harder than I've ever gone. But I knew, like, so, I mean, he's, Adios is 15'2 and 1,300 pounds. Like, he's huge. Mm-hmm. And he's super solid. He spends his whole time on the road napping. Like, it's not difficult for him at all. He doesn't take any schooling or anything, you know, and like he's just handled the hauling part really well. And I knew like the biggest thing is like I might not have been the very fastest coming out the gate when we're kind of getting started here, but I knew he could do it twice.
Yeah.
And I knew I was going to kill him in the average. And so like, especially again with the stallion, you know, it doesn't matter how he wins his money, he just needs to win the money. I knew in the beginning, especially now, like I have so much confidence in that colt as the average. Like, you know, give me all the averages because I know like they might beat me in a round, but they ain't going to beat me in average.
Yeah, that's a nice feeling too.
Oh, man, yeah. And he's cool because, so I joke, like, with the three times of Fury Mare, I always joke that I was like her peasant, you know? Like, I love her, but I don't know how much she loves me.
Yeah.
That Adios loves me back. And Sway was, like, so much, like, super strong, aggressive, like, kind of kamikaze. Like, she wouldn't be smart about the ground all the time. Like, she was so fast and just gave 150% every time. And Adios is so different because he's like very smart, very calculated, very aware. Like I've never ridden a horse that's that aware of where his feet are. Like, you know, on Sway, I would catch barrels here and there, just like a little bit, like an inch, you'd just be able to tick off. Adios knows where he is. And so like, I also really trust him on, you know, it could be like the Patriot, like deep and sandy. And then we could go to like Georgia and be super fast and the ground's tight there. Or Arizona, and it's huge standard pattern, you know, right. And it, like, I don't say that he has a preference, like, whereas a lot of the other horses I have had, like, a strong preference on what type of pen or setup that they want to run in, and I really trust him to take care of himself and stand up on the ground, which is, like, unheard of for a four-year-old, you mm-hmm. know, because it's just, like, that's just him and his style and how he wants to go, but also that's such a good feeling because I know that he can handle the runs and stay solid. Like, I was really excited when we come back from Arizona. You know, he tripped at Kinder pretty bad in the second round, but he still placed in the average. And then he come back, Arizona did great. And we come back to my vet after that, and we were going to inject his hocks and, you know, check him over and everything. And when we went to the vet, after all that freaking hauling, I mean, and then I blew a bearing in Arizona. So he was on the trailer forever. And my vet was like, he looks great. I don't want to do anything. I was like, this has never happened to me. So he just, I think too, I hope that one thing Adios can show people too is that you can, like, when they're, if they're quick footed and strong, like, strength is going to get you a long way. Like, as breeders, we want to breed for like that speed and, you know, like a leaner horse. But he's so fast and he's so strong and like he stayed so sound, you know? And so, like, that's really cool that, you know, to see like that type of horse being successful right now, because that's not typically, like, when you look at him, you're not going to think he's going to be some rocket. And so I hope that, you know, his babies have looked a lot like him, even on like really racy mares. So I'm super excited that he's like really throwing that consistency. And I hope that, you know, that helps to breed back in bone, foot, you know, all that things that are going to really help a horse for longevity.
Yeah. Who have been some influences that you've looked up to over the years in the industry?
Everybody. So The cool thing is in the fraternity world, it's actually like a lot more camaraderie than people probably realize from the outside looking in, because cults are super humbling. And so like just about the time you think you're a badass, they'll let you know that you don't know anything. And so that I really love asking everyone questions. So Jolene Montgomery has always been nice to me from like the very, very beginning. And mm-hmm. she's a good friend of mine and always somebody that I can go and, you know, ask advice to, and Molly too. And I really have, like, this last year I was writing some with Jamie Hunt. I sent him a mare of mine that the Pritzy Stinty mare kept catching barrels on her. And it's that same thing. Like, I was catching barrels, but the other two horses I was riding for my fraternity horses were a lot more my style. So like I really worked on that, and I could see like some little things. Like he kind of had me like clean up my approach a little bit to the third barrel, and we talked about like some timing stuff, and I kept telling him, I'm like, I know I'm doing something, like I know it's me. And we worked on some stuff, and then I went and exhibitioned, and I did what he told me to do. It was really funny because he was having me like face more square and put Adios in like a spot, and we did it, and then Adios like went exactly where I put him, and he texted me back and he was like, okay, don't do that on that horse. And it's been really fun though, because I think like him, he just told me when he watched him work, like, you need to be closer to the third, like that horse can do it.
Yeah.
You know, like where I think sometimes you have like that comfort zone where you want to be. And so it's nice sometimes to have like a little bit of that outside perspective. Definitely on the business end of things, I really have enjoyed, Fallon is a good friend of mine, really like on the business side, man, she has just knocked it out of the park.
Right.
And so it's really nice to have people in my life that also want me to be successful. You know, like it's really cool to have like all those people that are cheering you on, that want you to do good. And of course, like in the shadows, I'm over here stalking Cassie Mowry and Brittany Posey and, you know, all them.
Yeah.
I watch all them like a hawk too. And I really just appreciate like I noticed like so many little things. So it's been really cool to watch like this year too, like watching Dale Long has been doing really well, I think. And like, I'm like, his time is coming. He's right there.
Yeah.
It's cool to see him like in the work he's been putting in. And of course, like, Brandon Collins and Emily, they've been like freaking killing it the last couple of years, and so it's been really cool to like talk with them about different perspectives and stuff. And man, I've just enjoyed, like, I picked Cody Bowserman's brain the other day on Trace Aces, and it's just really cool to be able to just talk so openly and candidly with all these different people. And that's my favorite thing about barrel racing, is that there's like 9,000 different ways
yeah.
to get to the same place. And it works for so many people, you know, each different, like there's ways I could never ride, wouldn't work for me, but they come up consistently and win, you know? And, I just think there's a place for everyone in this business. So it's been really cool to see all that.
Thinking about your career as a whole, what win do you feel like has meant the most to you?
Oh, that's a crazy one. I think my favorite one probably would still be the slot race at Oklahoma City. You know, Cassie went in there and ran a 4, and if I was probably like writing her name on the check. Sway was the first horse that I had ever had from start to finish. So like that some other trainer hadn't started, like everything else I had bought had been like rejects up until that point. And so, you know, to have that horse that I had started and I had done everything with, and I was super nervous, and I just remember in the back, Cassie was saying something about the barrels like being plastic, and that mare would like notoriously drag barrels.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's advice was like, you just need to be safe, just get a check. And I was like, I feel like if I'm safe, I'm going to hit all three barrels.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's no way that this is going to be good. You know, when I went in there, I just remember like looking up and seeing the time, and she had Sway run a 2 at Oklahoma, which is crazy fast for a 3-year-old. And I just remember being like, oh my gosh, I did it. And you don't even know the things that you can accomplish until you are accomplishing them. You know, a huge part of like my page and all the things has been like goal setting. I'm super public about all my goals, and like, and you know, basically like y'all are going to watch me like sink or swim. And so it's super cool to see all the things that have like come to fruition from saying it. And Sway really gave me a lot of that confidence. So it started with that, right? So before I run her at that show, I posted like a list of my goals, and I was like, okay, these are the things that I want to accomplish. and one of them was to win $100,000. And Sway went in there, won the slot race, won. She was reserve and the rookie. In her very first show, she won $89,000. To think, like, you know, I had never won $100,000 on a horse before. And then to think, like, she just went out there and then three runs, won all that money. And now all I needed was $11,000. Well, $11,000 didn't feel like anything, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of been the same on audio. So all year, that year, we did all the things and put all the goals out there. And then it just happened, you know? And then the same thing for audio. So with him, we put out there, like, okay, you know, my goal is to win $300,000. I want to be the highest money earning fraternity stallion. And like, okay, let's go get it, you know? And when you say that out loud, like when I started out and I'm like, I have this little colt and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to do the thing. I'm going to win $300,000. People are like, you're crazy, you know? And now he has basically went everywhere, right? And like placed everywhere and all the things. And now everybody's like, oh my God, now I'm 90,000 away. Well, 90,000 feels really doable.
Exactly.
You know? But I know when you start out and you say all those things, and that's kind of why I share that stuff, because I'm like, I know that those goals sound crazy when you're trying to do it, but like, put yourself out there, you know, just, you know, I always say, you know, speak what you speak until you see what you say, and put that stuff out there. And just like, those are things, if you had told me like all these things, I would have been like, there's no way, you know, there's no way I'm going to be able to do that or accomplish that. Or, you know, I used to get my ass handed to me by all these fraternity trainers on the best bred horses that there are. And I'm like, I'm never going to be able to compete with them. Like, I'm never going to be able to afford prospects. I'm never going to be able to do all this. And it's like, by just putting your head down and being like, okay, you know, how do I get to the next step? And just like putting those goals out there, those little goals, and just one thing at a time. And, you know, and you just start, it's almost like a snowball. So then, you know, you start getting a little bit of momentum, and it's amazing what you can accomplish that, I mean, you don't even know you can do. And so I always say that, you know, the goal setting is so important, just because you're really going to be able to see it in front of you, you know, like it's always working towards those goals. And I think that there's a lot of people out there that are super capable. And if they would stop making excuses for what they can't do and why they can't do it, and just put that energy into going forward a different direction, they would be able to accomplish all those things. I come from absolutely nothing. A lot of people that, you know, haven't been following me a long time, they're like, oh, she makes all this money, all this stuff. And I'm like, hey, I come from like nothing. Like, I was riding auction horses. I've been bucked off so many times, I can't even count. Like, you know, all the things, like everything bad. I used to joke that I was getting all my bad luck out of the way in one swoop. Like, so much shit would be going wrong.
Right.
I think, you know, it's just hard work and determination, and it's cool because now I feel like, you know, yeah, I'm still like a little small fish, but I can play like on the stallions and stuff. Like, I'm playing with the big stallions now, coming from nothing. I mean, I bought them on Facebook, you know. I had a dream and was like, this is what I'm going to make happen. And, you know, it's 3 years of work and putting in the time, you know, like every time the same thing of like, I talk a lot about this too, because like I didn't have an arena for like ever. So like I literally hauled a ride. I still hauled a ride. I have my own place now, but we're like still building. And so I go ride at my land, but I still have to haul 20 minutes to get to my land, or I have to haul to an arena. Like, I literally haul every single day to ride. And so there's so many people out there that say like, oh, I can't do anything because I don't have an arena. I'm like, well, I won 600,000 and I've never had an arena. I try to just like say that to everybody that, you know, don't make excuses. Like, if you want it, nothing is going to stop you from doing it.
That is all for this episode of Between the Barrels. Thank you so much for listening. And to stay up to date with everything going on, follow us on all of our social media platforms. TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. As always, if you have any suggestions of people you want to hear from or questions you would like asked, email me at betweenthebarrels@gmail.com. I'm your host, Madeline Green. Tune in next week.